Right. Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Tzadi Dalid. We're going to finish up today's Tzadi Gimel and hopefully do not all of Tzadi Dalid, most of Tzadi Dalid. Anyway, God willing, today we'll be able to really catch up to where we should be. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long as Zechon Ishmael Sliba Garviela Bashmuel. Anyway, just if I'm going to go on record, I finished the last half hour of Professor Alman. It's long. It's an hour and a half. But okay. Anyway, I got his basic idea. I don't know if I can articulate it as well as he can. But anyway, let's. Just focus from the standpoint of the Mishnah and then the Gemara that we started with yesterday. Okay, we're really in bankruptcy court right now. That which is bankrupt is not the person, but rather the estate. The estate is totally bankrupt, and not totally, but mostly bankrupt. And you have a number of creditors. Here in our Mishnah, the creditor is coming in the form of a widow. Three widows are coming in. Each one of them have a shtar in their hand, shtar ksuva in their hand, and all three of them are demanding that they get now their payment. And there just simply is not enough in the estate to satisfy everybody. And so it comes up to a classic discussion, one that is discussed to this very day, and that is with the limited resources and limited assets of the estate, so how is it going to get divided amongst the three? Okay, so that's the problem. It's a problem of division. So again, if I can have Professor Alman just running through my mind, so the answer, of course, is that there's no answer. In other words, it's not one answer to this question. There are multiple solutions to the problem, but the Mishnah presents us one version. So the version that the Mishnah presents us is as follows. The Mishnah constructs a scenario in which there are three widows, each one of them having a ksuva, and the ksuvas are ranging in amount from 100, 200 to 300. The ksuvas were all affected on the same day. We point out yesterday, that's very strange. He married all three on the same day. It's unusual. It's highly unlikely. It's halachically questionable. But okay, again, those are important details. But just, well, in other words, we're just dealing with the construct scenario in which you have the three women, each one of them having, no one having a predated document over the other. So the dating is all equal. So now everything's equal except for the amounts that's owed to them. So how's the money divided? So if there's So there are three scenarios in the Mishnah. If there are $100 left in the estate, and we're now talking about the division of 100, so the Mishnah says it's easy. So each one of them has at least 100 claim against the estate, so that gets divided equitably amongst the three. Everyone gets 33 and a third. That one's easy. What if there's 200 left in the estate? So the 200 left in the estate, so the Mishnah says method of division is going to be 50 to Mrs. 100, 75 and 75 to Mrs. 200 and Mrs. 300. Okay, I know I give them funny names, but, you know, basically that's what the Gemara is going to assign them, those names. Okay, so that's 50, 75, 75. That's very hard to figure out, meaning that we don't really, again, just to borrow terminology from the professor, there's no real algorithm that gets us to that point of 50, 75, 75. But that's case number two. And case number three is that, let's say there were 300 left in the estate. So now how does that get divided? So Mrs. 100 will get 50, Mrs. 200 will get 100, and Mrs. 300 will get 150. Now it works out, again, how do you get to those numbers? That's tricky. But it works out, though, however, that each one of them is going to be collecting 50% of their claim. Okay, but after those numbers are presented to you, once you look at the numbers, you're saying, hey, that works out great. Each one of them gets 50. But how do you get to that point? What's the algorithm that gets you to that point? What's the formula? So that's, of course, extraordinarily tricky, and that makes for an interesting discussion. Professor Alman said it in an hour and a half, but okay, that's the trick. And then the Mishnah ended off by saying, and we're going to come back to the second half of the Mishnah later this morning, and it says, and the same thing with investments as well. Meaning, if you invest in a business, and how do the dividends get divided amongst the business? So you use the same formula. Although it would be fantastic if we knew what the formula was, but that part's tricky. But it's the same method of division when you have investments or investing into a venture as well. Okay, which we're going to come back to later this morning and discuss that later this morning. Okay, we already did the first part of the Gemara yesterday. I'm just going to review it outside. And that is, let's go with the first case is the easiest case. There's nothing to discuss. Meaning 100's left in the estate, three women, each one have a ksuva. Each one is going to get 33 and a third. Okay, good. Second case now is where things get a little bit tricky. Because in the second case, how is it 200 left in the estate? How does that get divided? 50, 75, 75. To which the Gemara asks a simple question, what is that? That doesn't make any sense. Meaning 50, 75, 75, How exactly does that work? So the first woman she's entitled to 50, meaning 33 and a third, right? In other words, for that first 100 that's in the estate, you have three women, each one of them with an equal claim to that 100. So 100 divided into three parts is 33 and a third. So why is that first woman walking away with 50? What's going on over there? So what did the Gemara do yesterday? Gemara gave an ukimta, gave the scenario. Meaning the Mishnah is talking about one very specific case. What's the case? Where Mrs. 200 says to Mrs. 100, look, I don't want to get involved. Meaning, that first 100, I'm staying out of that first 100. I'm recusing myself from that first 100. You know what? You fight it out with Mrs. 300. But in other words, I don't want to get involved. I like you. So, it's fine. So now that first 100 is divided 50-50 between Mrs. 100 and Mrs. 300. And then, it only begs the next question. And that is, okay, good. So now it's divided 50-50, and Mrs. 200 recused herself for the first 100. So then, if she recuses herself, so then what should happen with the remaining 50? The remaining 50 should go in its entirety to Mrs. 300, and then you have now 100 left. Okay, 100 left. Two people are arguing over that one, over that second 100. Mrs. 100 has no claim over the second 100. So that should be divided 50-50 between Mrs. 200 and Mrs. 300. So then, if this is the scenario in which the Mishnah is describing, so we should have Mrs. 200 walking away with 50 and Mrs. 300 walking away with 100. So the it's not a good way to explain the Mishnah. So the Gemara said yesterday, well, maybe the scenario is going to be even more specific and extraordinarily limited. It's going to be where Mrs. 200 says to Mrs. 100, look, I'm not recusing myself in that first 100. What I am doing, however, is I just don't want to be in contention. Meaning I still have a claim, but I'm just backing away from arguing and debating. So that first 100, so you and Mrs. 300, you guys fight it out. Although I am not excluding myself from that amount, from that money. Okay, so you fight it out with her. Okay, so they're going to fight it out, and each one is going to get 50. But the Gemara says yesterday, but that's not true. It's not that each one's going to get 50. It's that the Mrs. 100 will get 50 because she's only now bickering. Not bickering. Bickering is not the right word. But she's only now dealing with Mrs. 300. So she's going to get 50. Now of that remaining 50, so now Mrs. 200 says, look, she got hers. I still have a claim on that second 50. So now on that second 50, so now you and I have something to talk about. So on that second 50, you and I have something to talk about. That's going to get divided 25-25. On the second 100, that's going to get divided 50-50. And that's how you end up in the Mishnah with the conclusion of 50-75-75. It's an extraordinarily, in other words, what the Gemara basically did to the Mishnah is it really pigeonholed the Mishnah to a very limited scenario.
But the question is, why do they choose a $100 increment in section to argue about? Why not 150 to start with or 200 to start with? Say, they would argue the first two, 1 and 3, would argue about 200. Why choosing 100? Where does the 100 come from?
I'm going to be honest. I don't understand.
The second one is saying fight about the first 100.
Right.
Right. Right. Why choosing 100? Why don't say?
I'm just saying that
fight about the 200 or 150 of it.
Right. It comes out. What essentially the Gemara just did is the Gemara just came up with a scenario in which the numbers work. Meaning, the starting point is the end point. Mm-hmm. Meaning, we know what the numbers are. Right. Now what we have to do is we have to work backwards and we have to figure out how do we get to those numbers. Mm-hmm. How do we get to 50, 75, 75? How did that happen? Doesn't make sense. So in other words, good. So now that we have the numbers, so the Gemara said, okay, here's the scenario in which we get to those numbers.
But the thing is, the premise is that
choose to divide.
I'll tell you what. Come to me after. We'll discuss some more after. But that's basically the.
There's a premise that the first 100, the 100 went only to the claim to the first 100. She had no claim to the second 100.
Right.
So it was only 100. The second woman only has up to 200 claim, not to 300. So they're each limited by the amount of the ketubah, but how much they can argue with.
Right. Correct. Okay. Starting now, we're picking up where we left off yesterday. We're inside Gimel Amud Aleph.
One thing. The thing is that in this arrangement, had they followed the first
formula, right? She would have ended with $83, right?
Right.
So what she in effect is she's giving up $8 of her own from the original arrangement and $8 from the other lady.
Yes.
Entitled to.
Correct. So right by
she's being generous with somebody else's money.
I totally agreed. I understand your point, and good. That's what comes out with this very limited scenario. Okay, we're on Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph, we're at the two dots right in the middle of the Amud. We're picking up where we left off yesterday, Hayusham Shosh Meos. Now we're talking about a scenario where there are 300. So again, what's the conclusion? Of the 300, Mrs. 100 gets 50, Mrs. 200 gets 100, and Mrs. 300 gets 150. Now, Shamasai Mana, so again, the Gemara is confounded. How did we arrive at those numbers? So the Mrs. 200 is going to get 100, so Shivim V'chamisha Hu De'isla. What do you mean 100? She should get 75. Again, I was going to say, are we now assuming that, like the previous assumption the Gemara made, that the Gemara is talking about a very specific scenario? Well, let's see. The Gemara is going to give over here another very specific scenario. Amar Shmuel, because if it's Balas Shosh Meos, the Balas Masayim, or the Balas Mane, didn't drive Ein Liyemachem B'Mane. So the Gemara says here in this scenario, once again, in an extraordinarily limited scenario, in which Mrs. 300 says to Mrs. 200 and to Mrs. 100, she says, Dinu Dvarim, I'm recusing myself from arguing with you, from quibbling with you. So in other words, I stay out of that first 100, and so now that she's removed herself from that first 100, so that first 100 is going to get divided evenly now between Mrs. 100 and Mrs. 200. So that's why Mrs. 100 now walks away with 50. Mrs. 200 now has got 50, plus now an equitable division of the second 200, so that's another 50. So that's how she gets now a total of 100. And Mrs. 300 is going to get now 150. 100 of that last third 100, which is exclusively hers, because her ksuva is the only one that gives her a claim in the last 300. And then another 50 from the second second 100. Okay, if you got all that, great. If not, go over it again. But again, what the Gemara essentially does is it gives extraordinarily limited scenarios in which we can apply the Mishnah's rulings. So Rav Yaakov Minar Pekod Mishmei de Ravina Amar Reisha B'Shtei Tfisos Sefer B'Shtei Tfisos. Another way to resolve this Mishnah in terms of how did the Mishnah get to these numbers of 50, 100, 150, or to the case of 50, 75, 75, is by simply suggesting that when the properties were divided, they were not divided at all in one shot, meaning it wasn't an estate of 200, it wasn't an estate of 300, but rather the money's trickled in. How does that happen after the person died? That's generally speaking, that's a neat trick. So but that's not so crazy. In other words, it was just simply the estate had receivables in which collection did not take place immediately, and so as properties were coming into the estate as a result of the collection of receivables, so then it was divided. So the Gemara is going to spell out now, formulate, how does it work? So Reisha B'Shtei Tfisos, so the first, the Reisha, the first case, although when the Gemara now talks about the first case, it's not talking about the very first case of the Mishnah, because again, the very first case of the Mishnah is the easiest case to absorb and digest. We're now describing the second case of the Mishnah. Second case of the Mishnah with the estate at 200. But now the way the Gemara is presenting it is that it wasn't a state of 200, but rather, first the estate got 75. Okay, so the estate first received its first allocation of 75, and now a division of 75. So the 75, that's going to be divided three ways, right? Because again, each one of them has at least a 100. A 100 zuz claim on the estate. So 75 of the estate is going to get divided three ways. Each one of them is going to get 25. And then what's going to happen is that 125 came in the next wave. So 125 came in the next wave. So the of that 125, so the Mrs. 100 is going to be able to collect 25 of that first. 25 of that, and then the of the remaining.
Why 25?
Because it should be
should be only 25 should be divided three ways.
She already collected
75. 75 already divided.
Right.
So she
already collected 25, and now she's coming to argue only with 75 of the 125. And because she's coming to argue with 75 of the 125, and she's arguing with two other disputants.
No, the first pie. What was the size of the first pie?
First one was 75.
75. So she's only capped up to 100.
Right.
So if the first pie was already 75, and she's capped up to 100, she should only be able to argue for another 25, right? So then another 25, she would get 30%, not more than that.
Right. So the way, again, this is the way the Gemara is assuming, that this is the way Rashi presents it, is that once she gets 25, and now there's another... there's more money coming to the estate. So of that more money, since she already collected 25, she can only contest now of whatever comes in next, only 75 of whatever new money's come in. She can only contest 75 of the new monies, and she's arguing with two other people who have equal claims, equal or greater claims, so then she can only collect 25.
She's not following the original premise.
Okay, I'm just, again,
right?
I'm just presenting it in its simplest version.
Okay.
That's why she's going to get 50, and then the other two now who have equal claims to the remainder, so each one of them now is also going to get 50 of that, meaning 50 of the 120. 125, 25 was given off to the Mrs. 100. Now Mrs. 200, Mrs. 300 are arguing over the remaining
75.
Remaining 100, each one of them is going to get 50, plus from the first... From the first monies, each one got 25, so that's how we can come up to a scenario of 50, 75, 75. Seifa, and now let's go to the second half of the Mishnah. Tfisas enough, lushim v'chamish v'chazimna. So again, same starting point. The first monies that came into the estate were 75. Each one of them is going to get 25 of that. That's going to be divided equally. And then the next wave is going to be 225. Once again, of that 225, 75 of that is going to be subject to equal division amongst all three. 25, 25, 25. So Mrs. 100 now has got a total of 50. Good. Now she's out of the discussion. Two and three, each one of them got 25. It'd be better visually if you saw this on the board. Two and three, each one of them got 25. And now...
Split the 100.
Right. And now it's a splitting of the... 225, 75 already of it was taken away. So that is, now we're down to 150. So 150, so of the 150, got it. Of the 150, 50 now is going to be divided between Mrs. 200 and Mrs. 300. Good. So that gives Mrs. 200 now another 25. Good. Now she's got a total of 100. Good. Which is what the Mishnah describes. And now Mrs. 300, so she gets the remaining 100 of that second monies, plus the 50 she already collected, and that got her to 150. Okay, again, none of this is simple. All this is just, we know what the end is. It's just a question of how do we get to, from the beginning to the end. So we basically, the Gemara went about it in two different methods. Either number one is that we had... deals cut between the three people, so that way somehow one of them is going to recuse themselves from either one other two other people, and that's how we can get from the estate to the numbers of the Mishnah. Or another way is just simply say that the monies weren't all there at one time; the monies came incrementally in two different waves, and by doing so, again, you can get from the estate to the divided numbers that are described in the Mishnah. But neither what the Gemara has not done for us is the Gemara has not given us any type of formula.
This is very specific. Like if the money comes in incrementally or they have internal agreement. So, but there should be a general rule if there was no incremental...
Correct.
So what is that formula?
If
300 comes in one shot,
right,
there's no internal agreement.
Right. Correct.
Mean?
Good. So if you ask me from the point of the Mishnah,
yes,
so I wouldn't be able to tell you. Now again, you...
If you come in front of the judges, what the judges do?
I understand. All right, so I totally understand your question. So from the Mishnah standpoint, you literally would have no idea. Okay, good. So stay tuned. The Gemara is about to give us a different formula in terms of how to divide it, but you're right. In other words, from the Mishnah, you wouldn't know. And then all the Gemara did is just simply...
It's very specific.
Right, correct. Meaning after the Gemara got through the Mishnah, then the Mishnah is not giving us a rule. The Mishnah is just giving us a case, and let's figure out how we got there. Agreed.
That's, is the rule that would be a general rule or not?
Right. I totally understand. Okay, Tanya, Gemara, and by the way, we'll go through a little more Gemara together, and you'll see that the Gemara is going to address. Tanya Zu Mishnah Rabbi Nasan. Okay, the Braisa says, you know our Mishnah, right, the one we spent yesterday and a good part of today on, that's the Mishnah of Rabbi Nasan. I mean, that's Rabbi Nasan's opinion. But Rabbi Omer, Ein Ani Roed Dvar Shor Rabbi Nasan. But Rabbi says, I don't agree with Rabbi Nasan. Now again, you know, everyone understands the irony. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was responsible for the editing of the Mishnayos. But he didn't author the Mishnayos. He didn't write the Mishnayos. But in other words, so even though he's a grand editor of the Mishnayos, this is Mishnah. Meaning our Mishnah over here that we learned yesterday and reviewed today, it's Mishnah. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi puts it as part of the corpus of the Mishnayos. But Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says, but you know what? In the Braisa said, we know this. I don't agree. I don't think it's right. So, Einani Rod, Varsha Rabbi Nasan, Be'elo Elochokus B'Shava. What I think should happen is it should be an equitable division. Now, I said the word equitable division. Even what I said is not perfectly clear. Meaning, Elochokus B'Shava is not abundantly clear what exactly that means. Rashi over here.
Take a look at
Tosis over here. Tosis Rabbi Omer Einani Rod Vav Shor Rabbi Nasan Beilo Chok Mishava Perush Rabbi Nachanano Kaimelam Bahal Hilchusa Kerabbi. So the halacha falls like Rabbi, not like Rabbi Nasan. Now again, ask me the question. According to Rabbi Nasan, what is the formula? So I. That part's tricky. I don't know what the formula is for Rabbi Nasan. But the halacha falls like Rabbi, V'yef shalah hamidvar b'zman sheyesh sham shalosh meos cholkos b'shava, balas mea meo, balas masai meo, balas shalosh mea, meos mea, lefisha midas adin loke b'zeh. So, ela hamidu divrei Rabbi sha'amar shachokos b'shava, kol mana omana notlos b'shava, hilka chokin kol izavon hameis b'shisha chalakim, shal mana notlos chelak echa, v'shal masayim shnei chalakim, v'shal shalosh meos gimel chalakim. So it's interesting. What Rabbeinu Chananel is basically trying to figure out is, what is Rebbe's position? Meaning, good, we now know that the halacha does not fall like a Mishnah, but falls like Rebbe. And Rebbe says, Cholkos Bishave. Good, everyone gets a even portion. What does even mean? Even meaning objectively even, or the other possibility is that even means proportional to how much each one has. Meaning, even could simply mean the Balas Gimel misses 300, she has got a larger claim against the estate. So what she should collect is an amount commensurate to her proportion. Same thing with the 200, same thing with the 100. So Rabbeinu Chananel says that sounds like what Cholkos B'Shava means. Not everyone agrees with Rabbeinu Chananel. So again, even now at this stage of the Gemara, we now know we don't follow the Mishnah, but we're not perfectly sure of is what formula you use. But we use an even formula. Just a question of how to define even. It's objectively even, or it's proportional.
What
I didn't see. I didn't look it up. I didn't look it up.
He says not to marry three words.
Yeah, well, actually, he's not opposed to the idea in principle. I'm going to add later this morning. I'm going to add a fourth. So
it's not just it's clearly a partnership too.
Correct. Well, let's stay tuned now. And now we turn the matters over now from women and their ksuvas to general investment and partnership and distribution. So v'chein shoshashi tilu. Now the Mishnah says that this formula that we use. Now remember, the Mishnah is operating with Rabbi Nutzen's formula, whatever that may be. But the Mishnah then said, this same formula is also true for investors and distribution. In terms of an investor, what kind of distribution do they get? So it's going to be operating with the same construct. So Amar Shmuel, Shnayim Shetil Akiz, Zeman of Zem Asayim. Shmuel has a very interesting way to view partners and distribution. Let's say you have two investors. Right, literally the words mean they put in the pocket. But in other words, two investors. One invested 100, the other invested 200. Haschar le'emtza. Profit goes right down the middle. Okay, now I know in usually in a business model. So, right, in a business model, I cannot imagine that the person who invested more money is going to be interested in profit sharing. But profit sharing meaning literally we share the profits. I'll take 50, you take 50. But Shmuel's opinion is no, we do profit sharing. Now, as we go through the Gemara, you'll understand Shmuel a little bit better. I'm not saying perfectly, but a little bit better. But I'm a Rava, Mistabra, Milsa Shmuel. So Rava says, look, let's try to apply a little bit of logic to what Shmuel's saying. Shmuel's saying that despite the amount that each partner invested into the venture, each one of them is, in terms of profit sharing, it's going to be 50-50. So Rava says, look, I think it's logical to say that Shmuel's talking about Shor L'Charisha V'Omer L'Charisha. I think if we're talking about where the investors were buying a ox and the ox was there to plow, meaning, if we're talking about the services of an animal, so then I can make the argument that each one of them is entitled to 50% share of the profit. Now, even here, I understand. I understand. It's not necessarily intuitive, but at least we'll make an argument. Let's make the argument a little bit better. I'm going to quote Rashi. Shola Charisha. Shalaku Rashi is on the top of Sadi Gimel Amud Beis. Shalaku Bam Shola Chorosh VeChorshim Bo. Okay, we bought an ox and the ox is going to plow. VeEin Chelko Shozeh Moa Belo Chelko Shozeh. So Rashi over here discusses the significance of, even though the minority shareholder is a minority, but he becomes critical to the venture, right? Rashi says, without his investment of 100, we wouldn't have an ox. So in other words, yes, in terms of the amount that he put in, it's smaller than the other investor, but without him, there simply wouldn't be an ox. So below shechelko shazel klum, helka chok and b'shava. Therefore, profits are divided equally. Aval shor l'charishon v'yishbiach b'baster v'shachtu. Rashi is giving away the next line of the Gemara. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. See the Gemara inside, and then you'll understand the rest of Rashi. Aval, third line down in the Gemara. Aval b'shor l'charishon v'omid l'tvicha. But let's say the investors bought the ox, and the original plan was to plow with the ox, and now no good. Ox is not particularly well. He doesn't do well at this. So anyway, so what do they do? Okay, so we'll shach the ox and we'll sell the meat. So now we're talking about a distribution based on the actual ox itself. So zed no tolfi ma'osav, zed no tolfi ma'osav. So everyone takes proportional to the amount of money that they put in. Okay, so that is Rava's understanding of Shmuel. Rav Hamnuna Amar, Afilu Shur L'Charisha V'Omer L'Tvicha Haschar L'Emtza. So Rav Hamnuna says, no, the even if the original ox was purchased for plowing, and then afterwards shareholder meeting decision was made that the ox is going to be shechted. So even under those circumstances, Rav Hamnuna says, I think that Shmuel would in that case also concede that in terms of distribution, it would be an even distribution of the profits. Now, by the way, mind you, we're talking about even distribution of the profits. I'm gonna go off on a little bit of a limb, meaning I don't think that Rav Hamnuna says that it's an even distribution of the profits starting from zero. It's an even distribution of the profits after the investors got paid back their investment. It would be hard to imagine. I'm not saying I'm right, but it'd be hard to imagine that the investors would not first get reimbursed for their investment, and then and only then can we talk about an equal distribution of the profits. Otherwise, the person who sunk $200 into this venture is going to lose. He stands to lose. So, again, I think I'm not saying I'm right, but I think even Rav Hamnuna's version of Shmuel, I think it's only profit sharing, but not investment sharing. In other words, that original investment has to first be recouped, and then you can talk about profit sharing. Meisvei, the Gemara challenge is based on a brisa. Shnayim shitilu ki zeman avizemasayim aschar lamtza. Okay, so the brisa describes our scenario. You have two investors. One is investing 200, the other is investing 100. So what happens to the profit? The profit split down the middle. So that's right now, that's not the end of the brisa, But we're going to pause at this juncture of the brisa, and the Gemara is going to comment. My love, v'shol lecharisha v'omel letzvicha uti yufta derabam. Now we're going to speculate, but isn't the brisa talking about a case where the original ox was bought for plowing, and then at the shareholders' meeting they made a decision we're going to shech the animal, and now we're going to sell the animal, and doesn't that mean that the brisa said what happens to the profits right down the middle? So, and if that's true, all that is difficult against Rava. So, Avashol lecharisha v'amel letzvicha, my zenotofi ma'osav is there. I'm sorry. Lo. Sorry. Skipped a line. Bishur lecharisha v'amel lecharisha. No. The Gemara says, when we're talking about profit sharing, where it's 50-50, even though the investors sunk in different amounts, that's only talking about where the ox was plowing. Avashol lecharisha v'amel letzvicha, my zenotofi ma'osav is there. Notofi ma'osav. And the Gemara says, but if we're going to shech the animal, and now we're actually we're selling the meat of the animal, so then the investors are going to be collecting based on their investment, proportional to their investment. So the Gemara says, great, that's what you want to say the Pshat and the Braisa is? Look at the second half of the Braisa. Adin Nisefa, the Braisa then is going to give a contrasting case. And that is, Lakach Zebishlov, Zebishlov, and Isarvu, Zeno Tolfim Osav, Vizeno Tolfim Osav. Let's say the monies weren't pulled together by an ox, but rather, in this venture, everyone brought in their own animals. One brought in a big animal, the other brought in a small animal, and then we made a partnership, and then what we did is we wanted to liquidate. In this case, liquidation means shech the animal. So, liflo, and what does the brisa say? The brisa says, okay, here it's easy. In other words, I put in two animals into this partnership. So therefore, obviously, my recoup in terms of profits is two animals' worth. You put in one animal, you're only going to recoup one animal's worth. So the Gemara says, liflog v'lisnebi didei. Good, that's the second half of the brisa. You know, the second half of the brisa couldn't have given us a much bigger chiddush and a much better chiddush, and that would have been ba'med var mamorim. When is this so? Bishul lecharisha v'amel lecharisha v'al bishul lecharisha v'amel letzvicha zenotofi ma'osav zenotofi ma'osav. Instead of talking about where each partner threw animals into the venture, into the partnership, why not talk about a case where each partner threw money into the investment? The monies were pulled together. The money was used to buy an animal, and the animal was shechted, and the brisa then could have said, and each one is going to collect profits based on their investment. Why doesn't the brisa give that scenario? Hachinami kamar, the Gemara says, that's what the brisa means. You just have to read the brisa more carefully. If we bought the animal to plow, and then we decide to shech the animal, that is just like the case where everyone threw in animals into the partnership. Where basically, in terms of a distribution, each one is going to get paid based on the amount that they put in. Profit sharing will be based on the investor's proportion. To now we learn to the Mishnah v'chein shosha shitil akis pichzu osir kachin cholkin. If we go back to our Mishnah, what did the Mishnah say? If we have three investors, why is the Mishnah talking about three investors? Because contrasting it to the case, comparing it to the case of the three women. If I have three investors, either a depreciation or an appreciation, so that's how they would be divided, using the same formula as the Mishnah. Maila pichsu pichsu mamish, hosiro hosiro mamish. And again, the Gemara, the Mishnah is not abundantly clear in terms of what exactly it means by appreciation or depreciation. So the Gemara assumes we're talking about actual appreciation. So Rashi, the Ketani Kach, Hein Chokin Lefi Hamaos. And there would be a division based on the monies that went in, Vitziyufta de Shmuel, meaning, and this would really challenge the entire premise of Shmuel. What did Shmuel say? Shmuel says that anytime you have profits coming from an investment, and you have various partners, and each partner threw in a different amount, so Shmuel says profits are divided evenly. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says, no, profits are divided proportionally. So if that's the way you're going to understand a Mishnah serves as a difficulty to Shmuel. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravu, lo stira zuze charati, pizchu astira ditsunisa. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. So maybe when the Mishnah was describing appreciation, the Mishnah wasn't talking about actual profits that resulted from the investment, but rather monies became new monies, or monies became old monies. Now, In our day and age, it's a little bit tricky to understand what new monies and old monies mean. But back in the good old days, currencies back then, monies actually represented value, intrinsic value. Meaning monies were coins. Obviously, it was a currency. In other words, it was used as tender. But monies back then were actually going to be good or bad depending on the current government, the quality of the coin. So sometimes what the investors would do is they would throw monies together, and with a little bit of negotiation, a little bit of swapping, and a little bit of dealings, so they can basically not have profit per se, but basically have better quality monies in the that they did through their whatever business negotiation they did. Maybe what the Gemara is suggesting, and maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about. If that's what the Mishnah is talking about, so then if the company were to liquidate and each of the investors would receive their original investment, so under those circumstances, so then they would get commensurate to whatever they put in. And if there is a more or if there's less, each one is going to get commensurate to what they put in using the formula of the Mishnah. If, however, we're talking about profits that's coming as a result of the partnership, so then maybe Shmuel's right. So then maybe the profits will be divided equally, like Shmuel argued earlier. And then what if or the other way? What does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says that the money's devalued? It means that the currency was no longer current. And what can you do with the money? So that's what the Gemara says. Astira Ditsunisa, that the coins are so worthless. That basically it's almost I'm giving an analogy. It's like monopoly money, meaning it's there's no use to it whatsoever. So whatever you could do with the coins, back then you had a wound on your foot, so you would take a coin and you would tape it to the wound. Okay, that was that was medicine back then, using coins that were basically worthless. So in that scenario, so once again, as far as each investor getting what they put in. Proportional to what they put in, maybe the Mishnah is talking about that case. But again, if we're talking about profit and loss, so then maybe that's divided evenly amongst the investors. Okay, Adkan. Takes us to the end of that sugya. Admittedly, a challenging sugya. It's worthwhile to spend a lot more time doing. Maybe we scratch the surface. Mishnah Nasri Dal Nashim. Man's married to four women who mace, and then the man dies. So our Mishnah over here is going to be a little bit easier than the previous Mishnah, because here we know what the order is of these four women. Okay, so the first wife is obviously, she's got an earlier ksuva, so therefore she has first rights to collect first. Meaning the entire discussion we had up until this point in time, as we already explained, but just reviewing, is talking about where the three women of the previous Mishnah, all at ksuva, dated the same date. Here, however, four women came in to the family at different times. So first one in is obviously has an older outstanding balance, and therefore she gets to be able to collect first. Now, when each one of them is now going to collect, so you understand that there's somebody behind you in line that's also going to collect. So whatever you take is going to be less than the estate for anyone behind you who's going to take. So the Mishnah says you have to make a shvuah. And what are you going to say in that shvuah? Excuse me. What are you going to say in that shvuah? Take a look at that Rashi in the Mishnah. Emshniya Torenes. Hova at batli tol tchila. The second one says to the first one, all right, slow down, Mrs. One. Before you take hashbi ali, make a shvuah to me. Shalo gavis misha bali klum. You know, maybe before he died, he gave you a little extra, and maybe as like a prepayment of your ksuva. Like, in other words, how am I supposed to know? Dilma lo mishtar le nechasim kishir ksuvasi v'avshlishis tar makein l'shnia. Good. So that's what the first one's going to make a shvuah to the second one. And as the Gemara is going to point out, really the truth of the matter is the first one's making a shvuah to anyone else behind her in line. Just happens to be the second one immediately behind her. She's the one who's speaking on behalf of the other two.
What about swearing to the children?
We'll get to that. Okay, excellent question. Urevius the shlishis, and the fourth one swears to the third one. The aval harevius nifrash lo b'shvuah. Now, as far as the fourth one is concerned, she's last in line. No one else is behind her. And so now when she collects, does she have to make a shvuah? So as we're going to see in a moment in the Mishnah, she's got nobody to swear to. So no, she's not going to make a shvuah. Ukigon, I'm still reading Rashi, because Rashi now is addressing Ben's issue, and that is, well, what do you mean? She's collecting from orphans. Don't you always swear when you collect from orphans? Ukigon, she is amim gedolim. And the orphans over here are not young kids. The orphans over here are older, because of Aitaniki Amarabana and Habalipara, Nikhli Samalipara, Elabishwa Bisamim Kitanim. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, the Mishnah is talking about when you're collecting from young you only swear when you collect from young orphans, not from older orphans. We had a debate about this issue earlier. We're gonna see that debate once again. Let's go back to the Mishnah. So the Tanakhama's opinion in our Mishnah is one has to make a shvuah before she collects, as does widow number 2 and 3. Widow number 4 doesn't need to make a shvuah. Ben Nanas Omer, v'chim m'meshi achron niskeres. Ben Nanas says, no fair. She's the last one in line. She's going to profit. Now, it's a funny statement because she's the last one in line. By definition, she's not going to profit. But in other words, how come she gets a pass on the shvuah? Af hilo tipara l'b'shvuah. So he says, without explanation, she also has to make a shvuah as well. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to give 3 possible explanations why it is that Benanas has the 4th one making a shvuah. Haya yosis kulam biyom echan, kol akademus l'chaverta, afilo sha'acha zachsa. So let's say all the documents were done the same day, but let's say we could still determine which one came in first. So then the first one in is has the older obligation, the stronger obligation. V'kacha yukos from Yerushalayim sha'os. In Yerushalayim, in fact, when they would write up ksuvas, not only would they date it to the day, but they'd also date it to the hour as well, hour of the day. Sha'os ha'yukulan yotzim b'sha'achas v'ein sham el amane chokus b'shava. And then the Mishnah says that if all of them have the same time clocked in on their ksuva, I know it's unusual, but if they did, so and there was only 100, so then each one of them would get an equitable distribution, as we learned back in the previous Mishnah. But Maika Miflagi, Gemara starts off with the discussion, and that is, what's going on between the Tanakhama and Benanas? Tanakhama says, widows 1, 2, and 3 have to make a shvuah because there's somebody behind them. Good. The 4th one, according to the Tanakhama, doesn't have to make a shvuah, and Benanas says, no, the 4th one does have to make a shvuah. Okay, so what's going on over here? I'm a Shmuel Kagon. Sadi Dalam and off the very top. Shenim Tzachas Mehem Sada She'eno Shalo Ubachov Mukha Shakadam Vagaba Kemiflagi. Let's say that after widows 1, 2, and 3 made a collection, there are now rumors and allegations, whispers going about that one of those lands did not belong to our late husband. Our late husband was a bit of a thief. And I'm sure they had another number of other choice words to describe their late husband, but he was a bit of a thief, and one of those lands that was taken did not belong to her husband. At least that's the whispers that are going about. And now what's going to end up happening is that 4th woman's going to collect, and one of those lands is going to be taken away from either widow 1, 2, or 3, whichever land it was. And now the problem is that what's going to happen now to the 4th woman that took her land? Is it going to get removed from her or not? Goes back to a discussion we had a couple days ago, but we get to review. Right? We saw this back on Daf Tzadi. So 4 days ago, we saw this in the Daf. And that is that in terms of collection, so we know, based on the date on your document, so you are entitled to take first. And anyone with a later date is behind you in line. What if you cut the line? Now, remember, this was a tricky discussion we had a couple days ago. Okay, good. I understand. And now, what if you cut the line? So, obviously, you shouldn't. But what if you did? So, did you get it or did you not get it? That is subject to a machlokas that we saw earlier. The Gemara is suggesting that's exactly the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Benanas. The Gemara spells it out. Tanakhama savra mashagava lo gava, Benanas savra mashagava gava. So the Tanakhama says, no, you cut the line, we take you and we put you back exactly where you belong. So in other words, if one of the lands are taken away from the earlier widows, fine, not a problem. So we'll take the 4th land away from the 4th widow and said, look, I'm really sorry. Obviously, all the sympathy, all the compassion, but what's right is right. In other words, you have a later lien, they have an earlier lien, so we're going to take it away from you, and we're going to give them one the early ones. So even if she doesn't make a shvuah, so what? In other words, she's not causing a loss to anybody else. If there is, if an earlier land is removed from the widows, so we're going to take that fourth land and just replace it. However, according to Benanas, the halacha is that if you have a person later in line who cuts the line, in this case, however, she's not really cutting the line. But still, she, in other words, she should have not collected that land because one of the earlier lands was taken away, but she took it. What's done is done. And so therefore, Benana says that's why the fourth one has to make a shvua. Because potentially what could happen is that that land may need to go to one of the earlier widows, but she took it already. Therefore, she's entitled to it. So she could be causing a potential loss to one of the earlier widows. The only thing the shvua would do is just simply say that I took what was rightfully mine. And I didn't take anything more. I didn't skim off the top.
The thing is that couldn't you argue that number three still has a lien on
She does have a lien, but so does number four also has a lien. It's just that her lien is later. Right. And the issue is, if a later lien comes and collects, is that considered a collection? Mm-hmm. Benana says it is. That's why she needs to make a shvua, just to assure number three, not that I'm, you know, not that you're going to get the land, you're not. Just that I took what was rightfully mine. That is number one. That's pshat number one. Rav Nachman Amar Rava Baravua Dekuli Amar Mashagava Lo Gava. No, the Gemara says that's not correct. Really, the truth of the matter is, if you're later in line with your lien, so you do not get to cut the line. And if you cut the line, we take it away from you and we put you back where you belong. V'hacha, so that's true. What's the issue over here? Chayshin Hashem Atachzif Kamiflagi. Marsavar Chayshin Hashem Atachzif or Marsavar Lo Chayshin Hashem Atachzif. Another way to explain the debate, says the Gemara, is an issue of, look, the fourth one who takes the land. You know, she's fourth in line, but she doesn't know if the land's going to stay by her or not. And what's going to end up happening is she won't give it the proper treatment that it deserves. Because, who knows? It belongs to me, it doesn't belong to me. In other words, her connection with that land is very tenuous. As such, she may mistreat it. So Benana says, this is it's a psychology issue. You make her make a shvua on that land. Once you make her make a shvua, now she's going to take that land seriously. That's the svara behind Benanas. And the Tanakhama would say, no, you don't need to make her do that. She'll take care of the land. Abaye Amar. I'm sorry, Shema Tachsev. Abaye Amar da Abaye Kashisha Ika Benayu. Didni Abaye Kashisha. So Abaye gives a pshat based on a statement made by Abaye Kashisha, which I know, the two different Abayas. Yesom Mishama Gedola Main Sarach Lamar Katanim. So Tanakhama Leisle da Abaye Kashisha, Benanas Isle da Abaye Kashisha. And the Gemara suggests a third way to explain the debate between Tanakhama and Benanas, and that's very simple. When you're collecting from orphans, does that mean minor orphans, or does that mean even adult orphans as well? Abaye Kashisha says, even from adult orphans, you have to make them make a shvua when you're collecting. And that's the point of debate between the Tanakhama and Benanas. I'm Ravuna. Let's pause over here. I know I didn't catch up to where I wanted to, but the rest of the daf is pretty straightforward. We'll finish it up tomorrow. Again, just to review. Okay, we finished the Mishnah on Sadi Gimel. All right, the very interesting Mishnah in terms of the division. It's the famous bankruptcy Mishnah. Exactly what the formula of the Mishnah is. So you need to be a Nobel Prize winner to fully understand how to arrive at that algorithm. But the Gemara concluded the Mishnah represents Rabbi Nelson's opinion. Rabbi's opinion is Chokos B'Shaveh. Exactly what that means, so that also is not abundantly clear. Your two possibilities are either a just simple, flat-out, equitable distribution of the remaining assets, or proportionate to each one of the claims as I quoted Rabbi Nochananel this morning. Then we talked about investments, and we talked about profit sharing. Shmuel's position is that profit sharing is done 50-50, regardless of what the investors invested into it. The Shmuel's position is discussed amongst the Amorayim. The Braisas challenging the Braisas and the Mishnah challenge Shmuel. The Gemara defends Shmuel. Okay, and then we ended up today talking about a man leaving four wives. The case in the Mishnah is that each one of the wives has a different position in terms of dates. And the Mishnah's discussion is widows 1, 2, and 3, when they collect, have to make a shvua. Does the fourth widow need to make a shvua? That's open to a debate in the Mishnah. And the Gemara gives three different explanations of how to understand the machlokas.